Hello, my name is Melissa Rowland Smith, and we're here with Justice at Humber, Faculty Bites, episode number 2. I'm here with Professor Daniel Baer. If you'd like to introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Dr. Daniel Baer, and I've been a faculty member here for a year now. Before that, I was at Sheridan College for 2 years, and then before that, I was working on my PhD.
Awesome. So why did you decide to enter academia to become a professor?
It wasn't really a plan of mine while I was doing my postgraduate work. I'd always thought that I would go back to what I'd been doing before I went to grad school, which was working in civil rights law for the American Civil Liberties Union or a similar organization. And as I was doing my graduate work, I really got immersed in the research side of things and really found a strong skill set there. But I also found that my graduate teaching work was something that was really speaking to me and something that really I quite enjoyed a lot. And so realizing how interested I was in both the major components of what makes up an academic career made me think that perhaps I would go down that pathway. And when I moved to Canada midway through 2013, I wasn't quite sure what direction I would go, and I was just kind of, you know, finishing my degree and looking for a job, and I got hired very quickly at Sheridan College and haven't looked back since. Really think it was a great fortuitous opportunity. Obviously, I left Sheridan for Humber, but I think that in terms of teaching at a college, it's been a really good opportunity, a really great experience, and something that I didn't realize I wanted to do as much as I do.
Awesome. So since you were teaching at Sheridan, now you're at Humber, what would you say the best thing about being fresh at Humber College, if there's any differences between the two?
Certainly, yeah. I quite like the opportunity to teach on the degree. Both a degree and a diploma course offer more of an applied focus than you typically would get at a university. But I think coming to Humber has really been that right balance for me of the depth and focus on critical thinking skills that is required of a degree, while at the same time having the applied focus that the college provides. And I think the environment that we have here at Humber pushes those two areas equally and creates a really great experience for the students. But also, you know, let's be frank, this is my job, and I love coming to my job because we have such a great focus and a great program here. And, you know, it's not selfish to say I like having a job that I like.
Mm-hmm. For sure, and even for teaching, like from a student's perspective, we know that professors have the same classes, maybe multiple times in the same PowerPoints and same material. What kind of motivates you or spices things up during those lectures or classes?
I think for me, it's interesting, you teach the same class a couple times in a row. Like for example, right now I'm teaching 3 victims courses in a row, Wednesday morning, Thursday morning, and Thursday afternoon. And I like being able to refine it, and it's almost like a bit of a comedian on tour. You learn what's going to land and what doesn't land, and you get to keep refining and keep refining, but you know there's a core that's always going to work. And so while all 3 classes ostensibly get the same thing, it's those moments within all 3 of them that are going to be there and are good and solid, and that I can see students reacting to. Either questioning something they thought they knew, learning something they didn't know, or having to think about an issue in a new way that they haven't thought of before. It's that, I don't want to say the aha moment, because it's not always that big. It's often much, much more subtle. But seeing those moments and knowing that they're there is really important for me, but also going and improving it constantly. And so that at the end of 3 sessions of the victims course in a particular week, I know I've got that lecture better than I had it at the beginning. And I know next year when I teach that course again, I'll have tweaked the material, I'll have changed the lecture a bit, but I'll have done so with the knowledge that I gained along the way. And for me, the knowledge that over time it's going to keep getting better and better and better, and that I'm just at the beginning of doing good teaching is really what I think keeps me quite interested.
Awesome. So speaking of tweaking, for students, what are some areas or skills that you could recommend students to sharpen or work on or tweak before reaching their 4th year or the workforce upon graduation?
I would say broadly, communication skills are quite important, but at the same time, critical thinking. And the two are tied quite closely, because I have met plenty of students in my career who can read a textbook, read a journal article, and parrot back to me an idea. But they're not necessarily critically thinking about it. They're not taking the time to digest it and question what it means to certain aspects. They're seeing something there, and they know that they have to remember exactly what that says so that they can regurgitate it on a test. And I think that that's not particularly reflective of long-term life development and fulfillment skills. A career can be made on parroting material. Plenty of people have done it. It's not a bad thing. But to achieve the sort of growth and hit the sort of potential that I think many people envision for themselves, you need to be able to critically assess what it is that's in front of you, the implications that has for other aspects beyond the obvious thing directly to you, and have the ability to transmit or convey that information. And that goes to my second point of communication, being able to get up in front of a room of people, being able to write down concisely and clearly your thoughts. If you have the critical thinking skills but you can't convey it orally or written or through dramatic dance interpretation, whatever it might be, then all the critical thinking skills in the world won't do much for you. So I think there, it's really a combination. And I'll tell you, you know, it's a bit of bias perhaps, but when a really well-written paper comes in and it's clear and concise, it makes me want to give it a good grade. The content is still important and the content is still what the grade gets on, but when it's clear and, you know, if a little thing is missing, there's that much more leeway because you can understand where they're at. And when you have to take time to try and decipher a paper and decipher what someone meant by something, and you go, I don't get it, and it makes you a bit more sort of questioning of it. So good communication skills will probably get you the benefit of the doubt most of the time, even if you're not particularly critical.
Yeah. So for the skills that you're mentioning, so communication and stuff, for students that are receiving reference letters if they pursue master's degrees or after the criminal justice program, what do you think is the best way for them to go about to receive these references?
So I think that's really a longer-term process. When a student comes to me and says, can I have a reference letter? If I don't remember that student's name, it's probably not the end of the world. But if I don't remember that student, we're in a bit of a pickle here. And so I think it comes down to building a relationship with your professor. And this is something that is, it can't be overrated. Statistically speaking, those people who come to office hours, who ask questions, who engage, do better academically than those who don't. And that's fine by itself. But when it comes to a reference letter and you want me to write something that says you're great and you're wonderful and you're going to do these great things and here's why you should, you know, be able to join the academic community by getting a postgraduate degree, I can't write that letter if I don't know you, if I haven't had some experience with you. And I'm not saying we have to be best friends and go out, you know, on a bar crawl, but I need to know, I have to have some idea of your character, some idea of your work. And that doesn't mean you have to have worked on 15 different special projects. It means that you have to have shown some initiative in class and come up and ask me questions and talked about things. And in that point, I can go, oh, I understand this student. I get them a bit. I can see their personality and their intent. And I have their academic grades that I can look into and say, oh, okay, I see what they did in my class, and I can go over your old work. So I think it really starts all in the back end. When it comes to the actual time to ask, I think just saying, hey, listen, here's the thing I'm applying for, and I'd really appreciate the opportunity to get a letter of recommendation from you. Would you be okay with that? And being prepared that some professors will say no, either because they don't know you or they don't have time. But most of the time, I think you get a positive response, especially if you ask early, you know, as soon as you know. Because after I've gotten 10 requests, it's a bit, it's like, okay, I only have so much time to write all these.
Right.
And they do take a while. They, you know, for a student that I've been interacting with and have a good feeling for, it takes me a while to sit down and actually hammer out what it is that makes them capable of going on to grad school, and also what the particular program they're looking for, the particular program they're looking at is looking for,
right,
and making sure that I address those qualities. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Faculty Bites. And that's the end of episode 2. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. If you want to follow, it's Prof Dan Baer on Twitter, and you can see all my musings and get more interesting tidbits like this.
Awesome. Thank you.